And I caught that alley-oop with two hands on a court full of haters. And I dunked that shit. Reverse dunk. I pumped it three times and dunked that damn basketball.
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Also beat the Snow Bunny allegations. Welcome to episode 35 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. I'm your host, Sock Jig. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram as well at Sock Jig. So the rundown for today's show, I bring back Sneaker Guy of the Week. I talk about my recent pickups and some comments on some recent releases like the Tom Sachs shoe. I also share my thoughts on some upcoming drops, and I have cover a couple of news stories, the StockX defending their authentication program, Adidas suing Nike over their patents, and also a little bit about this bot instances thing that's been going around on Twitter. The main topic is I talk about the latest on the ZetaKix story. You know, not very much has happened since the last time I reported, so I give a quick update on what the latest is, but really more of it is analysis of the Ponzi scheme and how the word Ponzi scheme has not really been mentioned that much in articles and stuff by other people, probably by design for legal reasons. But, you know, I can say it here. Ponzi, 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 allegedly. As long as you say allegedly, it's fine. So I'll share some analysis on, you know, why it collapsed, why it was a Ponzi scheme, you know, what I think he was really doing, the effect it has had on resale and the secondary markets, and some winners and losers out of all this. And finally, some, you know, I give some cold, hard lessons we can learn from all this. But up front, I want to talk a little bit about identity and, you know, me having the sneaker count. I don't often comment much about things in the world. It doesn't mean I don't think about them at all. It just means that the sneaker account I created might not be the best avenue for it. And oftentimes I share those opinions and discussions with close friends. And it's a choice I've made that is basically just a sneaker account. It started out as a distraction for me. So my goal was always to make it only about sneakers and related things and always just as a distraction. So, you know, that's why I rarely talk about personal stuff or even other interests. You know, I could talk about NFL all day, even in the off season, or even these NBA and NHL playoffs. You know, I could talk about pro wrestling at a super nerd level, like how Konosuke Takeshita is the future. And, you know, but these other off-topic stuff, I'm not saying others shouldn't talk about that stuff. I just wanted to create a sneaker account and a podcast that talked only about sneakers and got to the sneaker talk right away. And, you know, sometimes these other interests get weaved into this anyways, especially on Twitter with, you know, Seinfeld Simpsons references or here with music references and stuff like that. But I bring this up because in Twitter I had replied to a mention that I'm not white, I'm actually brown, Jat Punjabi man. And I've said it on here before and I've said it on Twitter before, but it's easy to miss. And, you know, not everyone listens to the podcast and not everyone's going to see every reply to a tweet where I've mentioned it. So, you know, it's definitely who I am and how I see the world. You know, I was a child farm laborer. I had a very different childhood from a lot of other people. So, you know, I obviously I speak a different language. Here, let me try something out. Let me at me on Twitter if you know what I said here. Jinne bich baliye tu sari sajdi, unne bich ta mitran de boot ondeya. So, if you know what I said there, let me know on Twitter. Anyways, thinking about representation, especially in like the sneaker world, there really isn't much representation of Indians, of Punjabi. You know, I know there is a little bit in the sneaker reselling world. There's actually a lot of Indians out there, especially on Twitter. Shout out to Jot Boys, FNF, and, you know, everyone else on Twitter who follows me who's brown. But, you know, in the sneaker world, I don't see my people represented very often. You know, I've seen Gucci selling $800 turban and putting it on some white model on a runway. I've seen Pharrell appropriating Holi and, you know, sprinkling some colored dust on some sneakers, but that doesn't count to me. That's whatever. So I figured, you know, in the avenue and things that I do have, why not take some of that inspiration from my own experiences and let me weave it into what I have going on here. So it's not appropriation because I was actually there to experience it. So I made some Mr. Brightside socks. That's what this is all getting to. And they were inspired by one of the first Hindi movies I ever saw as a kid called Qurbani, released in 1980. And the title styling on the poster is what the inspiration is. And I had the vinyl soundtrack of it, which is very 70s, 80s Bollywood style music. You know, the title is stylized like in big block letters, and it's got an arm holding a dagger over it and stripping blood. And, you know, Qurbani is a Hindi movie, and I don't speak Hindi, but there's enough similarities where I get the gist of it. And the word means sacrifice. So that was a loose connection I had between this record, the album cover, and Mr. Brightside itself. And that, you know, we're always out here, we're sacrificing our time and our energy for these sneakers. And it sucks when you get the L, so let's make it a brighter day. Let's look on the bright side by making some jokes about it. But really, you know, I just think it's a cool logo. And if I think it's cool, I assume others will too. So if you think they're cool and would like a pair of the Mr. Brightside socks in black with the writing that says Mr. Brightside in, you know, 1980 Bollywood style lettering, you can get a pair right now. So just go to shop.sockjig.com. The password is Brightside, all one word, no spaces, shop.sockjig.com. They'll be available for 3 days after this podcast release. So you have 3 days to get them. There should be enough pairs. I've said, like last time, this release method has worked out. So I've been able to bump up the number of pairs I've been able to make. And as I've said, buying socks is the best way to support me and support the podcast. You know, I got called a clout chaser recently, and it's always pretty funny because, you know, I feel like I don't make enough content or make enough product for the demand that there is. So I really appreciate that there is demand. And so if you would like to support me, this is the best way to do it. So I don't do it very often, only, every 6 to 7 weeks or so. You know, and that's by design. I'm not trying to scale up to this huge operation, which, you know, ends up becoming a topic on the show at the end. And if you see these socks and they're not right for you, that's totally fine. That's acceptable. You don't have to like every single sock every single time. So, but if they are for you, go to shop.sockjig.com right now. Password is Brightside. Thank you. The sneaker guy of the week is the These Better Anyway guy. It was a banner week for this guy. This is the person who already owns, say, the Chicago 1 OG Highs, and he saw the pics of the reimagined ones come out and said, hey, you know what? These 2015 Chicago OG 1 Highs that I have, they're better anyways. I don't gotta reimagine shit. I got these right here. Those whatever crack shit that you got there, that's not OG. And really, I'm not exactly immune from this too. I was like, oh, hey, let me pull out my box of 2015 Chicago 1s. And even recently, when I thought I took an L on that general purpose shoe, a Tom Sachs raffle, I was like, shit, I got Mars Yard. These better anyway. And, you know, you want to casually flex and act like, you know, you're not pressed about the L. But, you know, how else are the Twitter streets going to know that you have a 2015 Chicago ones? They're not. But, you know, that guy is a little hurt a little that they're re-releasing because now more people will have it and it's not going to be as special. And you know that the odds of hitting it again are going to be low, but. And then you got to pretend you're happy for the people who did hit. You know, that's later. Don't worry about that for now. That's in October. But this week is your week. These Better Anyway guy, you are the sneaker guy of the week. Speaking of the Tom Sachs Mars Yards, on feet lately were those Mars Yard 2.0 and also OG Prestos that I took on a kind of a weekend trip vacation. You know, when going on a short vacation, you want comfort, but you also want to flex. So that was where I was like, okay, I don't want to just take some sort of beater shoes and walk around. I want to flex a little bit. I've barely been on a weekend trip. That's why I took the Mars Yards. And even though they're not very comfortable, they worked out pretty well. But before that, I was wearing Asics HAL Studios, highs and lows, gel something 1130, I think they are. I picked those up on the asics.com drop, and they're very comfortable, and, you know, I think one of the top 10 sneakers of the year for me. I was happy I was able to pick those up. For pickups, I will do pickups at the end because it's been a while since I've done this segment, so I've got like almost a month and a half worth of pickups. But for misses, I missed out on the Military 4s. Shoes like these tend to be the hardest shoes for me to get because I don't have any luck at Foot Locker. I don't have access to sneakers app. So, you know, I just kind of accept my L and move on. If I can, you know, enter a raffle, hit, and get it, that's great. Same with the Joe Fresh Goods 9060. I don't really have access to those. They didn't really drop in Canada at all. The Instagram drop that, you know, that happened and failed and worked for a lot of people and canceled for a lot more people, it seems. That, you know, on Instagram, it's US only. So even if you have a, if you're Canadian and have a US address, it, when you create your account, it's, you have to say you're from Canada or whatever. And ever since then, they just kind of remove you from access to that store. So, so no access there, and that's all right. You know, I will, there'll be more shoes from Joe Fresh Goods. In terms of skips, you know, I talked about, I skipped out the Stussy mids. I skipped out on the Green Bean fives. You know, I never really had them when those first dropped, so I have no nostalgia for me on that at all. These Teddy Santis sea salt white yellow shoes, I skipped out on all those. They're fine and all, but, you know, probably better suited for a slow release month. And, you know, I guess you don't always know when it's going to be a slow release month when other brands are dropping. ALD had this 991. I didn't enter the raffle for that. And I talked about this on Twitter, and it's like, you know, I skipped out on the 650 high raffle, and after that, I didn't win the raffle for the 993. It's almost like they punish you for skipping raffles. And I don't want to enter raffles for shoes I don't want. So I skipped 650, and I skipped these as well. And it wasn't about the high retail. And, you know, I saw a lot of, you know, talking about, you know, well, what about Jordan and Wave Runners? Those are all 300 and 275 and stuff. And it's like, the difference is those shoes and those collaborators and such are, you know, are over. They're established. What has a 991 ever done before? You know, it's got a couple collabs with, I guess, Pada and Aries, and that's it. It's, you know, it's not popular. It's not anything. Its distinguishing feature is that it's made in UK and the quality is nice, and that's why the price is high. And so that is why ALD is doing a collab with them to get kind of it out there, get it in people's hands so people can see that it's actually worth it, that it's good, and get it over. I also skipped out on the Casina Air Max 1s. And, you know, like I said, sneakers app is a no-go for me. And that's where it seemed like everyone had success with this shoe. I saw that only a handful of boutiques were releasing on Shopify drops, and so it was a weekday drop, so I just left it. It's just not worth waking up for me at 7 a.m. PST for a shoe that's going to release on two or three sites. You know, thinking about the collabs on Air Max 1s lately, it's like they almost all have to be wild and out there a bit. These Casina, the Clot with the transparent toe box, the Concepts with the wavy stuff and the, you know, 60s vibe and all that stuff. The Travis with, you know, the mashup almost with the, what's it called, ECG pocket knife. You know, or it has to be something distinctive, like how Pada had the waves and stuff like that. It just seems like it can't just be a colorway. If there's going to be a collab with Air Max 1, it just can't be a colorway. It's got to be something transformed or out there and not something simple. For pickups, I've been picking up a lot lately, and The first part, I've been picking up stuff from across the border. I ship to the U.S. I live close enough to the U.S. border where I can drive across and pick up the stuff. Now that it's finally open. Before, for the last 2 years or so, it was basically closed. So now I'm like picking up a bunch of shoes that have been sitting there for the last year. So it's almost like opening a time capsule. You know, I picked up all these undefeated Dunks and Air Force Ones, cool gray 11s, both the Kith Air Force Ones, the white ones and black ones. I shared on Twitter, I had the Warren Lotus Jason Dunk. That was like the first one to drop. And, you know, at the time it was kind of cool. I didn't know what was going to happen after that release. I didn't know that he's going to make a ton more and sell thousands and collaborate with Pigeons and, you know, get sued and all that stuff. So they're just sitting there. I don't know what to do with them. I guess it's just probably just a collector's item for me. It's cool to have, I guess, that this is a band shoe. I tried it on. It just feels kind of odd on feet. Some of the panels have good leather. Some of it has just the same old kind of regular knockoff leather. You know, I know he was saying that it's, you know, made in the same factory as Saint Laurent and all that kind of stuff. I didn't notice. Honestly, there's better quality on almost any GR SB Dunk that I've seen. Other pickups from the last month or so, I'll go from oldest to newest. I mentioned I picked up the ASICS HAL Studios, and I've been wearing them a lot. I really like those. I picked up the Jordan 1 Heritage. I bought those on Sneakers Canada, and they were just sitting, and I checked out. And, you know, it was like I said on Twitter, it was really nice to be able to just grab a shoe that's sitting that you like. In hand, some the white panels doesn't seem to be the greatest leather, but other parts seem to be really nice leather, especially like the toe box and stuff. I got the Hello Kitty Presto, but I was not really feeling it in hand. I didn't like on mine how the kind of the head was cut off on some of the panels. I might just return those. I got the Air Zoom Flight 95, the OGs. I know, I finally got in hand. I never had them back in 95 or so, and they're just massively bulbous in the back in a size 12 especially. Salehe Crocs, I was able to get one of those. I'm not a Crocs guy. I bought Merrells last year, only wore to wash my car really, so I usually just wear Adidas slides at home most of the time. So I'll probably just flip these. You know, and then Travis had a week of releases. I got the Travis Trainer Gray Haze on the Travis raffle. I've said before, it's a big man shoe. I was able to get my size 12 and a half in those. So I'm really happy to have those. I like them in hand. And, you know, I've got, you know, I got my trainer card. I got my chlorophyll mids and even some of those fragment ones that came out like probably 4 or 5 years ago now, 6 years ago maybe. I got the Travis Air Max 1 Baroque Brown, the one that looked like a briefcase. You know, these Travis, both the trainers and the Air Max ones, seem to be more available than, you know, recent Travis releases. Some sites had probably 400, 500, it seemed like even more. And, you know, the resale price is, you know, under 500. So more available, resale price is low enough, means that people will wear it, which is always good because then it's out there, it's on the streets, people are looking good, putting it, you know, work into it, putting nice fits together and things like that. I should mention I also got the Travis Air Max 1 Wheat, the friends and family one. Shout out to my friends and family at Team Travis. I should probably flex that one on Twitter. I haven't done that yet. I was also able to hit on the Ama Manier 2. I was lucky enough on my phone just to get in one of those ones where I was in the queue only for a minute or two. And it checked out. And so, you know, I've done the exact same thing before and I've had 8 minute queues. So whatever was different on this one, it worked great. Thank you, Shopify. Thank you, James Whitner. You know, it seemed like stock was low on the big sizes, but it looked like there was a lot of people who hit also on the sneakers app and stuff like that too. Finally, I was able to hit on the Tom Sachs General Purpose shoe on the raffle. I got the email at the 11th hour. Basically, I had to go to a wedding, and so I was basically checking my email while I was getting ready to go to this wedding. And it was kind of like the scene in Goodfellas where, you know, you're checking the sauce while also looking for helicopters, and there's kind of a time limit, and it's a little frantic. Basically, as I was getting into the car, standing in my garage in a suit, I got the email and basically checked out then. And then I was driving for like the next hour or so. So I'm glad I got it then, because 5 minutes later, I probably wouldn't have been able to check out. You know, as I've said multiple times, I've got a Mars Yard, so it wasn't really a must for me. I like the shoe. I like the idea of it. I thought the idea of the boring stuff was smart. You know, we already kind of had an idea of that it was going to be a general, you know, utility shoe just from the name that was leaked early on. You know, and I'm glad that it's more available that a lot of people hit. You know, this is the value of having an ultra hype shoe in the catalog and not releasing very often. You know, people want a Tom Sachs shoe really bad because of how good those Mars Yards are. And, you know, the overshoe didn't really cut it, pun intended. The 2.5 with the black toe cap never really released. So the demand is at high and people, you know, all rightfully have it as a grail shoe. So really it is the perfect time for Nike and Tom Sachs to come together and make a shoe for $110 and make it more available. You know, maybe they have 80K pairs and as they said, they're going to re-release it perennially or whatever. You know, with this release, I don't really mind a raffle, even if raffle bots do win. As long as I see a lot of people on Twitter winning, then I think the formula is right. As long as regular people can get it and raffle bots get it, you can't exactly stop all of them and filter all of them. Of course, if the stock is high, I prefer one of those, you know, domain switch drops. I'm not sure if Tom Sachs was set up for Shopify Plus. People were asking me before the release what kind of, you know, how's the release going. Like, no one knew if Nike was doing it on an, you know, on this sub site, which is not something they've done before, but I guess they did previously with Tom Sachs himself. There's some talk on Twitter about, you know, transparency and how raffles are filtered and letting people inside and letting them know how this all works. And, you know, I said that you basically just can't know. It wouldn't be no one wants to be transparent. Every team is different. They all have different needs and requirements. Some have a store and some are just collaborators. From what I've heard and the people who I have talked to who do know some of this stuff, most of them care. But the thing is, they can't just force everyone to care. Some care a bit, some care a lot. Others basically go for a hike during the release. You know, someone could have a great filtering system and go to a retailer and say, here's the perfect system. And that retailer could say, hey, thanks, we already got our own system. We're good. And that system could be a disaster. You can't force a retailer to take your perfect system if they already got a system. So, like I said, my test is, as long as I see enough people on Twitter winning, even if I took an L, then I assume the drop went well. Or at least well enough. The other thing is, sometimes these raffle bots are just treated like the boogeyman. Like, oh no, the raffle bots are here. They're taking everything. And sometimes someone has some screenshots and they get reshared and reposted as evidence that they're just taking everything. But honestly, I'm Mr. Brightside. I don't let that shit get me down. Even on raffles that I have lost. Like I said, as long as other regular people seem to be winning, I'm totally fine with that, even if I take the L. I just don't want to be in this misery business of tracking everything, tracking raffle bots and tracking backdoor and stuff like that. I choose to look at the bright side and get the pairs that I want, or at least get some of the pairs that I want. Because missing out on pairs is part of the game. Shout out Paramore for misery business. The other take I wanted to talk about was the, you know, if it didn't say Tom Sachs on it, it would just be sitting at Outlet's take. And in principle, I just usually ignore these kind of alternate universe takes. It's really common in sports. But when people are saying that, you know, saying this as like a commentary on Hypebeast and it's like a slam dunk on Hypebeast fickleness, it's not really. You know, my question is, are you sitting there in Kmart shoes making this point? If you're sitting there in some Walmart Shaq shoes, then go ahead and say it with your whole chest. But obviously you're not, and you know, neither are the IG commenters, because obviously you've placed some sort of value on a brand or quality or whatever. So, you know, in that alternate universe, it doesn't say Tom Sachs on it, and it's just a kill shot, and it's sitting at Outlets. But in this universe, it does say Tom Sachs on it. It does say Louis Vuitton on it. It does say Yeezy on it. It does say Dior on it, all that kind of stuff. So the entire point of these kind of shoes are that it's a collaboration of what I called previously a cross-pollination. If Nike tried marketing a shoe alone as boring, it would probably flop because people would be like, what the hell is this shit? But because they got this, you know, decade-long legacy relationship with a respected artist and they have an ultra-hype shoe in the catalog from it, they can then make a shoe where the premise is its utility and, you know, its boringness, I guess. With all that said, I don't exactly disagree with people who say, this, if it didn't say Tom Sachs on it, it'd be sitting at the Outlets. Because sometimes collabs are lazy and boring, and it's totally fine to call out a shoe for being lazy and boring. But that's where this one kind of disarmed the boring accusations by literally calling it boring themselves, which in a way makes it intriguing. But, you know, obviously if it's not intriguing to you and it still sucks to you, that's fine, just say it sucks. That take I will always listen to and not ignore, because I find it interesting what shoes people do not like. I had some random thoughts on some upcoming releases, so I just kind of grouped them all together here. For New Balance, I saw that Action Bronson has a collab for the 990 V6, which I don't think has, you know, even come out in a GR version yet. And, you know, I saw that it was like some wild colors and neon and that kind of stuff. And the only thing I could think was, wow, he was basically fumbled by Adidas, that, you know, Adidas had him under their umbrella when he was at his, you know, ultra high, and nothing ever really came of it of any consequence. And really, they had Joe Fresh Goods too. And I was just thinking about how they had this, you know, calling all creators slogan and everything. But whatever it was with Adidas and those two, it just didn't work out. The other thing I wanted to point out was about New Balance was Streetwear Nightlife on Twitter had pointed out that Teddy Santis basically took the whole Joun palette and put it on his GRs. So now Joun has to basically do these like Dark Soul shoes and stuff like that. You know, maybe they had a negotiation and Joun Man was like, hey, just give me green. I'll give up grays, but not mushroom. you can have everything else. You can have cream and all that kind of stuff, but just give me green. You know, speaking of Jound, I saw that they have this like Reebok superstar looking minimum security prison shoe. And one thing I noticed from that sample promo photo, that, you know, the shoe is on like a tablecloth and over in the corner is like a plate with two lemons on it. It's like, why would a shoe ever be on a table with two lemons on it? You know, this is just mood board shit, just has us accepting some prison shoe on some gingham picnic table next to a plate with two lemons on it, like it's a photo shoot for some Mediterranean cookbook. You know, maybe this was the table where the Jound man was negotiating with Teddy Santis. And, you know, Daniel Arsham was standing over there in a corner wearing a painter's hat and, you know, nodding along. You know, speaking of mood board shit, I saw that Ama Manier has possibly a 4 coming out. And one of the things I saw was there's this guy on IG, Andu something, who actually works for Jordan Brand. People were sharing his, like, mock-up that he had done. And saying that this is actually the one that's, you know, that James Whitner had previewed. And really it's not. He was just some guy who, you know, he didn't even like make those shoes. It always looks like he actually crafted those shoes, but he's just sitting there in Photoshop making these shoes and he calls it a mock-up. And, you know, he does it so well. It's like, why bother, you know, sending away for Tiny Tools to make this kind of Game Boy sneaker when you could just Photoshop that shit? Anyways, I see that stuff and I'm just like, eh, not for me. More Jordan stuff that's coming out, the J Balvin 2, you know, that just looks like a volleyball with LED lights. You know, it's Wilson the volleyball goes to a rave up. Travis Jordan 1s are coming out pretty soon in July, I think. And we saw with the trainers and the Air Max 1s that those were more available. And so I'm assuming that these will not be as available as those ones were, because it's always that push and pull with, you know, demand and all that kind of stuff. Either way, it's the shoe that I'm probably most looking forward to this year. For Jordan 1s, I saw on, you know, both the Visionaire 1s, the Volt 1s that are coming out, and obviously the Chicago 1, Reimagined 1s, that they have this cracked leather on the white panel part, which was also done on, you know, the Ama Manier Jordan 1. But, you know, the cracking on the leather on the white, on these Chicago and the Visionaire 1s looks a little bit different. And these also have a crackling at the collar and stuff, so I was theorizing that basically they figured out a way on how to do this at a kind of a bigger scale. So now they got to apply it to a few sneakers. And I think the Stage Haze, Bleached Coral, or whatever they're called now, have the same effect as well. You know, Nike usually does this for a while. They'll do it on a few pairs, then they'll move on because you don't want to, you know, overstay your welcome and have cracked leather ones on shoes for 4 years straight. And for Chicago 1s, it's about as good of a reimagining as you can get. I have the 2015 Chicago 1, so I don't have this intense desire where it's a must and a need for me. If I get them, it's great. If they're reasonable on resale, I'll probably pick up a pair. If they're 1K and above, then, you know, I'll be fine with my 2015s. More Nike stuff. I saw that Ambush has this Air Adjust Force. You know, that is a shoe for East Bay catalog dads. You know, those people don't know a thing about Ambush. So I get the fact that you got to use a collaborator to, you know, introduce a retro. But give those dads the GR that they want, then put this back in the Nike vault. So I don't know who's really clamoring for an Air Adjust Force, especially from Ambush. You know, recently Ambush had that Lakers clothing collab, and that was just awful. And it was not flattering at all. I saw that, you know, Nike has a collab with Jacquemus coming out soon. And I bet they will kill it. I can't wait till people call it Jack Mouse. So I'm assuming it's called Jacquemus because that would be the French way to say it. The Louis Vuitton Air Force One seem to be rolling out still. You know, I'm kind of conflicted about these shoes because it basically taking something from that was very much from the streets with Dapper Dan and everything, and it's basically handing it only to the very rich. But the thing is, you know, in death, a lot of things get absolved, and I can almost forgive it because it is Virgil's project and Virgil's gone. So it's Virgil's legacy. And, you know, obviously the shoes are fire. Some are more fire than the others. Maybe, you know, maybe there should have only been 10, 15 instead of 47 or whatever. But, you know, Virgil's gone. Maybe there could have been 100 pairs and I would have been happy with that too, I guess, because these would be the last ones that he's done. So, you know, I'm not that angry about it, but, you know, I also don't have any expectations that I'm getting a pair. And I've heard that sales are slower than expected, but I don't know what the latest on that is either. you know, maybe the rich people don't want the mids either. And I've also heard that, you know, there might be a second drop later. If there's 47 pairs, maybe this first one is only half and the rest go later. Another one, it's like, obviously, if I could get a pair, it'd be nice. I'd cop and keep, just like I would if I got the Diors, but I'm not chasing it. And, you know, I've never bought anything from Louis Vuitton, so I don't think they're calling me anyways. Another thing I want to talk about was Nike SB and how they're kind of, they're back now. It looks like some of their, you know, stuff was delayed for the first half of the year because of, you know, transportation issues and all that kind of stuff. The Neck Face Dunk was previewed and, yeah, you know, I got to admit, I was kind of disappointed at that. I thought they would just take one of his premises, one of his, you know, skeleton guys or whatever they are, and put it on a shoe, whatever fit a shoe the best, and it would have been awesome. But instead, it looked like, you know, some metal denim jacket that skids would wear. Maybe that's a Canadian term. Skids is what we would call metalheads who wore those denim jackets with AC/DC on the back in the town I grew up in. Nike SB Jordan 4s are coming. Nice Kicks broke this story, but really, you know, I basically had the story last December when Costin first posted these on IG and I kind of put two and two together. I saw that he had wear tester numbers on it. I took a screenshot of his IG stories and I posted it and I said, hey, Jordan 4 Nike SBs? Question mark. You know, either that's my sneaker IQ or someone told me back in December and I didn't say anything. So, as I said before, being a sneaker leaker is actually too much stress and I don't want to do it. So you always have to be right. You always have to have 100% hit rate. Otherwise, one miss and someone's just waiting to throw that shit back in your face. And it's fine. I don't need that clout anyway. So, you know, I leaked those Mars Yard samples. I hadn't seen those in a while. Actually, those were someone had those on eBay a long, long time ago. Those files were sitting around forever. A friend was like, hey, remember these? And then we started talking about them. And so then we decided to leak them. So that's how it came out. Huff has a Dunk Low coming out. And I bet you that most likely it's a reimagined version of the High. And if you weren't around back then, the High was this tie-dye version. So either they just take the same shoe and they put it to a low, or, you know, they change the tie-dye like they did with the Ray Guns. If that's what they end up doing, you heard it here first. If not, that was my guess. Anyways, the private selection account will probably leak it soon enough anyways. And actually, you know, that was one time where I did make a mistake on the show where I said they're from LA and I just misread their Twitter bio wrong and they're actually in Dallas. A couple short news stories I wanted to talk about. First, I saw that StockX is out there with this PR campaign to kind of defend themselves. And really, they have to. They have to enable trust with their customers because Nike is out there in the court of law eroding that trust. How they did it, you know, is if it's successful or not, I'm not sure. They have this PR campaign with this infographics and stuff. And, you know, once you actually read it, it sometimes calls into question what they're actually doing. So, like, you know, one of the ones said, you know, they have basically it came down to that these authenticators are doing up to 100 or so a day, which basically meant that they spend, you know, 1 to 2 minutes per shoe. And when you think about it, it's like, is that enough? Can you really authenticate a shoe looking that long at it? And I was thinking about it that if it's mostly just 350s and dunks, you probably can do it in a couple of minutes. I'm not sure how much the success rate of catching fakes would be if you spent 5 minutes versus 2 minutes on a Zion 350 dunk. If anything, I bet you would just cause more delays, which would have people complaining even further that they're not getting their shoes from StockX that they ordered. I'm not sure if StockX has what GOAT does, where you know, first party people who are trusted partners have kind of a pre-authorization. So if someone with GOAT has a pre-authorized kind of relationship with them, there's usually someone who sells a lot of high volume and is trusted to have authentic shoes. So when something sells like the 350 or Air Force Ones, that seller ships it directly for GOAT. And then they also had this video where the guy was looking at a patent bred one. And even that was a bit more detailed than the infographics, but still it didn't seem like he was looking into every single thing. I spoke to a couple of authenticators that work there. You know, off the record, they basically said, you know, for most shoes, you really do only spend a couple of minutes on it because most of the time it is those, you know, high volume shoes like 350s and dunks and things like that. But on any single one, if there's something that's even slightly off, they'll obviously spend more time on it. And anything that's of high value, they spend more time on it, which, you know, was not exactly shown in their videos. you know, they're doing this campaign. They seem to be fumbling it a bit, and it's classic StockX, really. You know, obviously, you want to share data, you want to build trust, but you also don't want to bring up more questions about your process as you do that. What would have been hilarious would have been if they did an entire video of authentic Nike sneakers that they rejected for glue stains or bad stitching or anything like that. You know, the same guy, you know, just have him, Justin, here, look at that. That's a glue stain. This is a real shoe. We saved the buyer from having this shitty glue stain and sent it right back. Have one after another, that would be hilarious. But I'm sure, you know, someone in the replies is going to be like, hey, I would actually take those shoes, offer me a discount, you know, stuff like that, because that's just how discourse is these days. The other story that recently broke was that Adidas is suing Nike in federal court for patent infringement related to patents about, you know, these Adapt sneakers with the buttons and stuff like that, and also related to Confirmed app and Sneakers app and stuff. So basically with patent law, if you have something that you think is innovative that no one else is doing, you file a patent for it. There's a long process. You have to work with like lawyers who, you know, just specialize in patent applications and things like that. And then finally you're awarded your patent. And once it's awarded, you have to basically go out there and defend your patent. And if you don't, then other people will basically start using it. And then if later on you try to go after those people for using your patent and you go to a judge, the judge is going to say, well, why didn't you do anything about this earlier? So that's why these kind of things go to court. And most of the time it's just settled with the other company paying, you know, usage fees for that patent. Otherwise, in this case, Nike could actually, you know, fight the case, and then they would have to disprove the patent, which is actually, probably a difficult process to do. So, you know, say for each one, they would have to show where they had done it first. And that kind of battle is going to be long and costly, and it's probably much cheaper just to pay them off. So my guess is Adidas just wants to get a payout, and they probably have a good case. Also, I wanted to briefly talk about this bot instances thing, and I will give you the short, kind of easy to digest version of what that all meant and my kind of thoughts on it. I always use the metaphor of a toaster. So say previously they were, you know, a bot had a 10 slice toaster and each slice was targeted at Easy Supply. Well, lately they've been scaled up to having a 1,000 slice toaster, a 10,000 slice toaster, and, you know, getting more and more sneakers that way instead of relying on getting a higher percent from a smaller toaster. Does that make sense? Basically, all that bombards the Yeezy Supply site with traffic, which means it's costing Yeezy Supply more and more to keep the site operational. So some bot devs decided to kind of, you know, come together and say, hey, if we keep doing this, Yeezy Supply is going to go down. We're going to be the ones to force a change on them because we're doing this. So let's all kind of pinky swear and agree that we're going to limit our toasters to only be, you know, 200 slice toasters instead of these 10,000 slice mega toasters. So there's long, you know, Twitter Spaces talks about it. So if you're really interested in the topic, I recommend going and listen to those. And honestly, I'm not trying to make fun of those people. The people had good intentions. They were like, hey, let's work together. Let's not fuck this up. If someone is out there trying to collaborate and say, hey, let's work together, there's nothing wrong with that. But really, human nature tells you everything you need to know. If there's an edge to be taken, it'll be taken. And, you know, botting is not illegal, but really, you gotta pretend that you're Jack Sparrow here. You're a pirate, and there's no honor among thieves. And basically, that's what happened. So for these Onyx Foam runner drops, some bots ignored the instant stuff and they had success, while other ones limited it and had some success, but not as much. Some may have lost money. You know, I'm kind of oversimplifying this all just to make it kind of more understandable instead of saying the word instances over and over again. I did see a lot of people saying that, hey, whatever, I don't think Yeezy Supply will ever remove this, you know, the first come first serve waiting room queue thing that they have right now. You know, they need us to sell it out. And, you know, honestly, my guess is that these days are numbered for Yeezy Supply. And the only reason why it's lasted this long is because of Kanye's kind of special relationship with Adidas. He's got it basically spelled out that Yeezy Supply is his, it gets this much stock, and it will have its own team and things like that. Otherwise, all that stock would already be unconfirmed. It would already be on the Adidas site. It would already be all merged. So So that's probably the real reason why they haven't changed anything. You know, but we do know that they do have devs, and you know, they were former sneaker bot developers themselves and sneaker Twitter people. So my guess is, knowing devs, they're working on the next version. That version will one day release, and then everyone will have to figure out the new version. Whatever that new version is, maybe it's raffles, maybe it's something else, maybe it's, you know, Adidas Yeezy confirmed, a new app, whatever. You know, but in the meantime, get your toasters ready. So let's get into Zeta Kicks and the latest updates. Really, all we know since the last podcast I did is the FBI is investigating. There still hasn't been any charges or any bankruptcy declared. The site is offline. And from what we can tell, some of the assets have been liquidating. Prices of certain shoes on StockX especially have been dropping ever since May 24th, the news first hit about Zeta Kicks. Right now, the assumption is that his receiver, David P. Stapleton, is selling off inventory, but really no one knows who it is that is doing that. And in an Oregon Live article, there was a quote from a person named John Ponte, a self-described kind of old-school lender who was working with Zeta Kicks up till last year, I guess. He was quoted in that article as saying that he was reluctant in investing with him, but then Zeta showed him his financials and saw that he was doing $5 million a month. Then somehow got out of this whole scheme when he failed to ship his shoes to his son. Great luck by him getting out of the scheme before it all collapsed. But really, that's what I want to talk about here is the word Ponzi scheme and how it seems to be, you know, people have been unwilling to say Ponzi scheme in both on Complex podcasts and even in those newspaper articles and stuff like that. I don't know if that's for legal ease version, that it's best to not say these kind of things while FBI is investigating. But I did find it interesting that, you know, the Complex pod was like, you know, you got to hear both sides, and you're not going to hear both sides. You're not going to hear Zeta say anything about this. So you might as well, you know, say what you have to say. But who cares what they got to say? I don't have to, you know, give them suggestions on anything. And I'm free to say whatever I want on here. So let's go. So with that said, let this be a disclaimer that what I'm going to say is my best guess. I don't know his operation. If I say a number, it's just my best guess as well. I'm sure there's a lot more to a lot of this, but this is the simplified version of what I think what his scheme was. First off, some definition. I've seen people say pyramid scheme and Ponzi scheme. They're very similar, but there's one key difference. And pyramid requires people to go out and actively recruit new investors. So that tier recruits new investors, which recruits new investors. And whereas a Ponzi just requires new investments. And that's what happened here, is like the kind of sneakers did the marketing for him. And one person making money told someone else that they were making money, and it just kind of spread that way. They weren't actively going out and saying, hey, I need 10 people to sign up for Zeta Kicks and use my referral and things like that. So this alleged Ponzi scheme was basically taking orders for mostly Nike, some Yeezys, and any shoe that just leaked, GR Jordans, and, you know, big tent drops like the Jordan 11s and things like that. One side note on that, I always thought it was interesting how he never touched like Panda Dunks. Even those are seemingly more available in, you know, hundreds of thousands of stock. But anyways, he takes all those pre-orders for all these shoes and he has a pool of money. And once a shoe is available to release, and then he would buy some of those shoes. And from what I can gather, he was buying them all on the secondary market. StockX, GOAT, eBay, maybe, you know, bulk botter guys were selling to him. He said himself from other sources, stores and suppliers. And obviously he probably did have some of those connections as well. You know, he was fulfilling orders in 2015 before StockX existed, but of course eBay existed back then. But you know, I'm sure he had way fewer orders back in 2015 than he did this last year. So obviously he was deciding on how many of the shoes that he would buy to fulfill orders. I'm sure that number changed per shoe and, you know, per the resale price on the secondary market. For example, if there were some ultra hype shoes like the Chunky Dunks, maybe you fulfilled 25%, 30%, 15%, I don't know. Maybe for some, you know, regular hype shoes, he fulfilled 40%, 50%. Semi-hype, maybe 80%, you know, maybe even 100% of those. For Brex, I'm pretty sure he fulfilled all of those ones. For example, he could have pre-sold Sakai's for $350 and then bought them on StockX later for $200 and made money on all those ones. Same for these Travis Trainer 1s that released. Obviously, I think he took pre-orders for those for $350, $400, $300, whatever it was, because the resale price on those right now is $200. So for one release, for one shoe, let's say, he would say buy, let's just say 60% of those ones. And he gets those in, and he's shipping those out. For all those unfulfilled orders, those 40% that didn't get one, if no one complains, he does nothing. He keeps that money. If they do complain, he would buy time. He would stall in emails, say that it's coming soon. If after a while he, you know, installed as far as he could, he would then refund. And first it seemed like he was refunding via wire transfer. At some point, he changed to store credit then. And my guess is that's probably around the time where he decided that his exit was coming soon. Anyway, so that is his alleged scheme. He would just repeat that over and over. And, you know, over time, there's always a shoe releasing. So there's always something in the warehouse, always something to collect and buy and, you know, group together. But the scheme was always to fulfill some of the orders, not 100% of the orders. And this worked because new money is always coming in. New pre-orders are always coming in and only some of it was going out. And then he was taking that money, putting it into cars, watches, a weed farm, allegedly. And, you know, of course, doing this while all in massive debt that is just growing and growing. But the cash flow is coming in and in. So to summarize, he was allegedly buying shoes off StockX to sell to resellers for less than what he paid. Those resellers would then sell on StockX again, make their money out of it, and then they would take that money and buy more sneakers from Zeta, which gives him more cash to buy from StockX. You know, obviously when you look back at all this and you see that there's kind of signs everywhere and people, you know, even in, who talked in those Twitter spaces and stuff knew that it was shady and basically, you know, wanted to keep the scheme going before it collapsed. But some of those callers in those Twitter spaces, man, they were really victims. They were like out there saying, hey, no way, you don't get it. Zeta is legit. Like they just didn't understand that they got scammed. Or they just don't want to accept the fact that someone like themselves could get scammed because they trusted him. And that's what he was really good at. He was really good at that social engineering of establishing trust. He was establishing trust by not having any fakes whatsoever. People say he would buy your shoes from them. They would pass authentication. And even selling hype shoes, the ultra hype shoes, was part of establishing trust. It shows that he was a plug that I can get shoes for you for a cheap price. And maybe that's why he never dealt with Panda Dunks, because those are, you know, the world of GRs and he's the plug. You know, that kind of, those chunky dunks did a lot of the marketing for him. Someone would say, hey, I got chunky dunks and Travis 1 Lows from him. And that would ultimately convince others to give him a try. You know, wiring money was also a way to establish trust and ultimately a sign of, you know, if someone is wiring you money, that is basically just giving you cash. So this guy's legit. He's basically wiring me money. And then I heard he was, you know, sometimes offering you 30% more money if you had waited, say, a long time for your Jordan 11. So say you, you know, had a refund of $10,000 coming and now he's willing to wire you $13,000. You're like, holy shit, I'm getting, you know, paid interest here. So this is great. And ultimately that keeps you in the scheme. Store credit. That's another one that keeps the money in the scheme, in the Ponzi scheme. Shitty customer service. Like I said, same thing. It's hard to get your money out. It's hard. You didn't want to get on his bad side. He was arrogant and mouthy, allegedly, in emails or stalling on orders. Even banning your address. That was all part of, you know, kind of the Ponzi scheme that, hey, I don't want to get banned. I don't want to miss out on this lick. So just kind of fall in line and wait. And then we'll all make money. You know, all the other kind of stuff too. The more obvious ones that it was the Ponzi scheme end up being that he was sometimes leaving eBay and StockX tags in there. The wild terms of service on his policy that if any, no one actually reads that kind of stuff. But if you did, you probably would have thought, hey, this is crazy. And also, of course, all his expensive watches and cars. Why did it collapse? Of course, it was probably designed to collapse is my guess. But all, you know, Ponzi schemes do eventually collapse. You know, my guess is when he stopped wiring money back and started getting store credit is when he first probably knew that it was over. Basically, it collapsed because it was probably a victim of its own marketing success, that it was getting more and more people to try it out, and that was bringing more and more money in. And that number that he had, that formula of fulfilling some orders, was getting harder and harder to obtain, especially with these big releases like Cool Grey 11s, also obviously the Chicago Ones, and even these Travis Frags. Ultimately, I think it was probably cook groups that also contributed to this, because he started taking bulk orders from a lot of groups. And as I said before, these groups, they want to compete with each other. They want to also, you know, give value to their members and, you know, want to scale up. They also want to be the plug. So if you take bulk orders from members and just take that money and put it into Zeta and don't tell anyone that it's coming from Zeta, you look like a plug yourself. And it was not just, you know, cook groups that were doing this. There were like full-on sneaker investment funds with a pitch deck and everything. That was all just a front for Zeta pre-orders. You know, thinking about this, and how did resellers get to this point? You know, I have some sympathy for some resellers and really not that much for others. So it depends on, you know, who they were and how they got, how deep they went. A lot of it, I'm assuming, probably started small, made some money, so invested some more. Like I said, with the cook groups, I think a lot of these resellers saw that their peers were investing more and more and they were making more and more money. So people just kind of worked themselves into ignoring all the red flags. My buddy SB Mitch on Twitter had a theory. He said that, you know, his theory was that most of these guys had never had to be cautious before due to either affluence or privilege, which made them kind of easy targets for scammers like Zeta. If you saw in those Twitter spaces, the people who got scammed were, you know, it was all over the place. There were like old people that had been buying shoes from him for years, you know, before StockX, to, and, you know, telling long run-on stories on Twitter spaces. Or there were people with like 40 followers who basically never tweeted before who are now saying, I had 40K with the guy. You know, one guy was on there and he was basically saying that, you know, he created a Twitter for this, that he was basically too New York for Twitter or Discord. But, you know, what SB Mitch said there about the affluence thing, I think it really does have something to do with it. And I'm not trying to get into a class war or anything like that. And, you know, I don't mean white people. And I, you know, I know there's a lot of brown people and everyone, but I, you know, I just don't know. I if you grew up poor, I just don't know if you're now willing to have someone give you, you know, $30,000 store credit. But ultimately, this whole thing was basically about trust and gambling. You had trusted Zeta to make you money, and you were gambling your $40,000 that you would make money out of it. And these days, you know, who's the one who's going to be willing to gamble $40,000? Maybe it is the more affluent people. Maybe it's just people who leverage all the way. It seems to be all of the above. But another thing I wanted to talk about is kind of like all the different parties at play that had their kind of hand in the pie, and if they are winners or losers. First up, Nike. You know, one question is really like, how much did they know? You know, I've heard that they were investigating him for a long time, and they were probably looking at him for selling fakes at first. So it's possible they started working with the FBI and things like that. And so everything is pending FBI investigations. But what is interesting is I've heard that they would often change things based on what had been leaked and what had, you know, come up as a pre-order page on ZetaKicks. Say something was supposed to be an OG high, Jordan 1, all of a sudden became a mid or a Zoom Comfort or something like that. This is unverified. I couldn't verify with very many other people, but it seems something that I could see happening, especially for some of the sneakers that have been kicked down the line 2 or 3 years. Compared to the ones that do come out, you know. Ultimately, Nike's a winner. Their shoes sold. It created hype in the market, the secondary market for them, which ultimately helps them themselves. So the secondary markets, really, StockX, GOAT, eBay, I guess, they probably lost their best customer. You know, I was really wondering if he was a VIP at these places. Did he have a VIP kind of contact? You know, it's possible he used different names and family members and things like that. But basically, you know, the secondary market lost 100 million market GMV, the That stands for gross merchandise value. Like I said, if Zeta was buying off StockX and then selling it to a reseller who was then selling it on StockX, and then Zeta was buying it again off StockX, there's a lot of StockX back and forth there, and they're taking some money out of all those pairs. So, you know, how culpable is StockX? You know, did anyone see that there were thousands and thousands of pairs going to Eugene, Oregon? Did that set off any alarm bells? Did they alert the FBI? I don't know if you would have to alert the FBI if someone is buying thousands and thousands of sneakers from you. Probably not. But they could probably really create some interesting reports of, you know, which shoes are sold, which ones went to that, you know, zip code, that state, that name. They can make reports on what shoes have been dropping in price since May 24th. Who is dumping all that product? Is it the David P. Stapleton person, or is it other people that we don't know? So ultimately, StockX and I guess the other secondary markets are losers for having lost their best customer and all this GMV, gross merchandise value. PayPal, I guess if they lose money on this, even them, it seems odd that they didn't freeze his account for all these high volume transactions. It seems like PayPal, you know, without much notice, shut some people's accounts down, but I guess they didn't shut his down. So in this winners and losers segment, I guess PayPal is a loser too. You know, banks who loaned him money and were, you know, getting interest from him, they're probably winners. They'll probably be the first one to get paid and in any kind of dissolving of his assets. Shopify, you know, I bet Shopify has a ton of information on all the volume of orders, which orders were canceled, which ones were fulfilled, how much store credit was given, how much store credit was redeemed. And, you know, I've seen people tweet that, you know, this is going to make an awesome documentary one day. And really, the story is all in these Shopify or PayPal transactions and in those StockX transactions. If that data were to ever come out, it would basically tell the whole story of what ZetaKix was doing. But that is all kind of privileged, private customer data. Usually, a platform doesn't even have access to their own customer's data because that's the customer owns that data. So it's confidential, and I bet the only people who can have access to it is law enforcement. So the only way this kind of data would ever come out is if there was an FBI request or, you know, some whistleblower leaked it. You know, I was thinking about Instagram resellers and these kind of volume resellers that are basically unaffiliated with Zeta. Say they're street guys like Upscale Crack or Dracula or, groups like Soul Street and stuff like that. They're winners in all this. You know, they see the market is crashing in a lot of pairs, and I bet those guys got rid of those pairs a long time ago. So, you know, those people are the real plugs and can actually get pairs without having to, you know, resort to a Ponzi scheme. So ultimately, they're winners as well. Consignment shops, in a way, they've kind of lost supply and the market's crashing right now. So I guess losers in sneaker investment types as well, too, the market crashing and especially if someone is buying up patent bred ones, or if anything, when price goes down like that, someone like that would say, hey, the price is down, let's actually double our investments and buy more. But these same people are also probably buying up military fours now to hold for later. So it's interesting to see how this whole ZetaKix story affects resale price itself. You know, I mentioned how on StockX, those prices of those shoes have started going down since May 24th. And, you know, obviously he was propping up the market, buying up pairs at resale price. And he was buying them in large volume. But you see some of the shoes that are being sold off. Jordan 12 reverse flu game shoe. I saw on Twitter someone had said that they had sold close to 7,000 pairs to ZetaKix. One of these botter types. Jordan 1 Volt, which is a shoe that was already kind of low anyways. Patent Bread, that's another one that's been dipping. You know, the state that we're in right now, there's really, you know, not colorways that are dropping aren't the greatest, like these Volt Jordan ones and these Heritage ones, even though they're, you know, red, white, and black. Jordan 2s have never really been, you know, a top five Jordan silhouette anyways, but this is the year that it's been given, so this is the year that they're coming out. But, you know, we're back to the era where the GR Jordans and the average shoes are back to being bricks and not flipping. And so back in 2020, especially, all those ones were flipping. You know, with all that said, ultimately, resale won't ever die. A good shoe is a good shoe. Like, look at Military Fours and these Joe Freshgood 9060s. There's always going to be something good releasing, and there's no signs of Nike or Adidas scaling back. But as I've said about resale, someone's got the time and the ability to get a sneaker, and someone else doesn't have the time or doesn't have the ability and is willing to pay for it. And that is never going to change. Some lessons learned from this whole Zeta Kicks thing. Some obvious ones. You know, we've learned to look out for signs of a Ponzi scheme. You know, all the old sayings, like, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And other ones, you know, that we all kind of know and sometimes ignore. Like, if you're going to gamble, maybe don't invest your entire net worth. But some other ones that I want to talk about is, don't share what you don't need to. I saw a lot of oversharing about how much they've invested, how much they've lost. Maybe it's not a good idea to have all that out there. You know, that leads to another one. I saw that there were, you know, people are quiet about their L's. You know, people who were like the plug and stuff like that were really just, you know, buying stuff from Zeta Kicks and not really the plug. You know, another obvious lesson, I forgot this one, was, you know, how good was your credit card company or bank? You should really think about it if they're giving you hassle compared to, you know, Amex that kind of gave you your money right away. You know, another lesson is kind of targeted at resellers is, you know, do you really need to scale up? And, you know, this point is where the kind of, you know, the anti-resellers will say, hey, get a job. And it kind of has some merit. In any operation, in any career path, there's always going to be ups and downs. And maybe all of this, you figured out that, hey, I made this mistake, I learned my lessons, and I'm still going to apply myself and just going to continue making more money because I want to work for myself. Or maybe this was the wake-up call you needed that being an entrepreneur isn't for you, that you don't have the skills to be the plug, that it was just a Ponzi scheme the whole time. Whatever it is, think of the next phase, use the skills you learned, and, you know, don't waste your youth, don't waste your 20s fucking sniffing cardboard in a warehouse somewhere. This has been episode 35 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll catch you next time, but most of all, go fuck yourself.